Today is July the 9th, the year 2004. I'm here at Ellis Island with Ruth Twombly and Marguerite Monard Kelly, who is making a return engagement, having been interviewed with her cousin Heidi Shirley at an earlier time. And this interview, as the earlier one, will be concerned with Friedrich Ernst Ohlhagen, who was interned here as an enemy alien agent from 1940 to 1947. And as Heidi Shirley mentioned, she visited him with her mother in 1943. So now Ruth Twombly, Heidi Shirley's sister, will talk more. And apparently you had more contact with your uncle, Fried, than Heidi did.
Right.
So, okay, why don't you say again, please, for the tape, your birth date and where you were born.
Well, my birth date is 030430, and I'm the only member of us four children who was actually born in Germany. And so I was born in the town of Celle, which is the home of my grandmother, and of course where Friedrich Ohlhagen also lived for quite a while.
Right? Uh-huh. Spell the name of the town just for the
right.
Time.
It's Celle. I have just read a book actually where it's spelled with the Z, and so evidently it has some different spellings, right?
And how long did you live there?
Well, a very short time. I came back as a baby. For some reason, I was born there, and my mother being there. And I believe I was about 6 months old when I came here. Mm-hmm. But my father lived here, and the USA, Brooklyn, was their residence.
Right? I see.
So...
And it was your mother who was the sister of your Uncle Fried.
That's correct.
Okay. Why don't you talk about your earliest memories with your uncle?
Right. My earliest memories are pretty continual. He was a constant visitor, and I think from my earliest youth, I remember him dropping by. Now, I had come back to the United States. Well, I shouldn't say back. I arrived at the United States when I was 6 months old. But this was at the time of the Depression, as you can tell. Mm-hmm. And I was two when my older brother and I, were sent back to Germany. Oh. And we stayed with our two grandmothers. But most of the time, the grandmother in Celle. And so we stayed there for about 2.5 years, constantly wondering if we would be picked up again by our parents. But fortunately, they came for us 2.5 years later.
Wow. Now, was your Uncle Fried in Germany at that point?
From time to time. He was a traveler, and I recall him being there from time to time.
As he was in Brooklyn from time to time,
I guess. He would visit from time to time. Uh-huh. And in fact, I believe he lived in Brooklyn, too, for a while. And but he was a constant visitor for years.
Uh-huh. Now, what were the circumstances as to why you... Was it because of the Depression that you and your brother were sent?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And my father had worked for several banks here. I think his ultimate bank may have been the Chase Bank or Citibank. Anyway, for large banks here. And he did lose his job, ultimately. And he had to go find other work, which was not easy for him. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I've tried to quiz him on the subject and find out some real details, but he said, you know, we tried to forget that time. Mm-hmm. And even though I had pointed out to him that many people made a great deal of money from discussing their hardships in the Depression time, I could never lure him into telling me very much about it. Uh-huh. I do know that my mother had to go to work, and at those in those days, women did not go to work if they were married. So she had to say she was single.
Oh.
And had to maintain that pose mm-hmm. until they came to get us back.
I see. Do you know what she did?
Yes, she was a governess. And I know she worked for a family called the Kirks in Morristown, New Jersey.
Jersey.
Mm-hmm. And actually, she remained friends with them. I got to know the children whom she took care of.
Wow. So it was just you and your brother? You were the only two children at that
time,
point?
Right. Mm-hmm. And we were, as I said, sent to Germany. And it was quite traumatic for both of us.
Mm-hmm.
But we were glad we had each other.
Yeah.
And in fact, we have sort of, I think, maintained almost a relationship of twins because we depended so much on each other.
And what is your brother's name?
My brother's name is Otto, O-T-T-O. And actually, I called him after I had heard that Heidi had spoken with you to ask him what memories he had, and because we came here together to visit Uncle Fried, usually.
Oh.
I don't ever remember coming alone. That doesn't mean I didn't, but I don't really remember coming with him.
Did he have any memories that were
salient? If I would tell him something, then he'd remember it too, but he didn't offer it. So, since he's older than I am, he may very well have more if he puts his mind
to it.
Right.
Do you think he might consent to be interviewed for this?
Well, I talked to him about it, and he may very well. I think he enjoys being interviewed. I would expect him to be.
Well, so, he's welcome. Let him know that if he decides he wants to, that would be great.
I'll tell him.
Yeah. Okay, so do you have memories of those 2 years, 2 to 4.5 years
of
age?
Oh, I certainly do.
What are the things that, when you think about that time, what are the things that mostly come to your mind?
Well, for one thing, we both had polio when we were there, so we knew we had that experience. I've pretty much locked it out of my mind, and but we were both quite ill when we were there. We were also shifted from one grandparent to another, and we tried to work things out so that we would stay with our paternal grandmother if we were never brought back. If we were never picked up, we tried to figure out a way to stay with her instead of the one in Sella, because my brother had trouble getting along with her.
So that would be the mother of your mother and Friedrich.
Right.
So what was it about her that made you want to stay with the other one?
Well, my brother would say I was the goody two-shoes, so I always got along with both of them. He disclaimed my, since I didn't mind either one, but I had to agree I liked the other one better. And she was simply a nice person.
Was the maternal grandmother strict?
She didn't seem to be, not to me. I think maybe she was a little bit more strict with my brother. Actually, we were happy in both places. Yeah. At least I was.
Yeah. And so what do you remember aspects of the people around you, the town around you, the living?
Right. We liked it. She had a very large garden. And if you were hungry, you simply could roam that garden and eat strawberries and fruits and apples and all these things. They had dogs, they had chickens, they had...
Now, this, which grandmother is this?
This is now Fritz's mother.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And she was a very good gardener, and we definitely had a good time there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, I remember being in, you know, just playing games in the field there, and there was what they call a hoof, which is a large sort of a simply...
Old backyard.
Well, it was a bare area where you could play, mm-hmm. right? You were not damaging plants or rooting
behind
things
that,
up. I know we killed a whole lot of chickens by mistake.
How did you kill them by mistake?
Well, we were loving them too hard. They were supposed to stay in little rooms and be our children.
Uh-huh.
Wow. And we were told about this many times, that we had done this.
Uh-huh. Is there anything that you can say from your experience about sort of the child rearing in Germany compared with what you experienced
here? In the USA, no, because the child rearing when between 2 and 4 was just a lot of freedom and mm-hmm. a lot of chance to play.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
So it was, I just remember it as being pleasant. We did more things with our other grandmother. She took us on walks, and then we were learning things to recognize mushrooms, and went to a beekeeper and talked to him and so on. She was more educative. Our other grandmother just sort of let us be ourselves.
And were you learning to speak German then?
We spoke totally German.
Totally German.
Totally German. So I went from speaking, I'm assuming I could speak English at 2, but probably not much. When I came back at 4 and a half, I spoke only German. And the grandmother in Celle knew no English. My grandmother in Frankfurt knew English. She had lived in England for a while, and she knew English, but my grandmother in Celle did not. So, but I think I must have learned English before I came there, then thought I forgot it. Because when I came back to the United States, first day I went to school, I knew very little, could understand very little. But it seemed to me within 2 weeks I was up to speed.
Wow.
Or in no time at all.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Right. Now, do you remember any experiences with your Uncle Fried during those 2 to 4 and a half, those years, 2 to 4 and a half, when you were in Germany?
No, only that we were glad to see him, and that he was always entertaining. But that's about all. I think he gave us, you know, took us to a store and had cakes.
Uh-huh.
And that he called me Mousy, which means little mouse. But I never felt like a mouse.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess it was a term of endearment.
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah. He also called me Lotta. And I don't recall him actually calling me by my real name. But that didn't matter either.
Mm-hmm. What is Lotta? Is that some significant?
I don't think so.
Yeah, uh-huh,
no.
Uh-huh. Okay, so then you came back here, and were you sorry to leave Germany, or were you?
We were very glad to be going with our parents. We had thought we would be abandoned, and we were very glad they came for us.
And they both came.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They both came.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember by any chance the leaving Germany and going to the port and the ship?
Oh, I certainly remember the ship,
What was that? Do you know its name?
No, I don't remember the name. But it was certainly a very large ship, and we had a fairly stormy crossing, and quite a few people got seasick. Mm-hmm. We played games. One game we played was Barber. I don't know if my mother liked that game because we had less hair when we were through with it. And
you played that aboard the ship?
Yeah.
What year was that then? When you were coming back, must have been 1934?
34 or 35, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and I do know it was a stormy crossing. And I was extremely embarrassed that I couldn't read, so I spent a great deal of time pretending I could read. I would always study the menu. Uh-huh. But we had a good time on the boat, met other kids, and the grown-ups were glad to be left alone.
Uh-huh. Now, when you first arrived in New York, you came into the New York Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Did you come to Ellis Island?
No.
No. What were your first impressions coming as a 4.5-year-old to New York? Do you remember that?
The only thing I remember is that my father told me that I was going to have a meeting with a doctor, a little physical exam, I suppose. And he asked me not to yell and scream. And I asked him why he asked me that. And he said, well, the last time you saw one, you yelled and screamed. I had totally forgotten about it. But when I saw the doctor, I deliberately yelled and screamed. I knew I didn't like him.
Where was the doctor? Was he on the ship?
I think he was on the boat. Or uh-huh. I think it was just a matter of coming into the country. They looked at you.
So, in other words, you received an examination on board, probably.
Possibly.
So you must have been traveling first or second class, I would think.
Probably, yeah.
I see. Uh-huh. And so then you probably got off at Battery Park, and then what happened? Do you remember your first experiences coming into New York?
No. Mm-hmm. It just seemed to be, I don't remember any of it. I do remember a little bit of our life in Brooklyn.
Okay.
But
what section of Brooklyn?
I know we were close to Prospect Park because we used to go to Prospect okay. Park. And kindergarten was imminent, but my brother was older, so he went to kindergarten pretty soon. Now, there went my companion. Right? Mm-hmm. My comrade in arms was gone half the day. And he came back, and I asked him, well, what is it like, you know? And he said, you wouldn't want to know. And that was the end of the discussion. That's the same one who may come to visit you.
Okay. So, how did your life change? Just, you know, those first months here as compared with your life in Germany with your grandmothers?
Well, it was much more constricted because my parents only had an apartment in Brooklyn. Uh-huh. And we played in a little cemented area that was behind our building. And I know once when I was recovering from a cold or something, my mother had made a chalk line and I was supposed to stay within the chalk line. So it was much more restricted. We didn't have this running around in a garden that was acres big.
Mm-hmm. So your mother now had stopped working, or
yes, she did.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So now, do you remember your Uncle Fritz's visits in Brooklyn?
Not
as you got older.
Not too much. I don't remember him actually coming to Brooklyn, and things were not going swimmingly then. But they were simply good enough to mm-hmm. have your two children back home. But it wasn't too long before my father bought some property in Brightwaters, Long Island. And Margaret and I actually just went and visited this old place of ours. And he started to build on weekends. He started to build the number 3 model from the C.S. Roebuck catalog. Oh. Wow. And that is actually still there.
Wow. Now, did he continue to work in a bank, or did he
do
something else?
No, he was starting to work in a pharmaceutical company, which was E.L. Patch, and was situated in Boston, actually. Uh-huh. And he had a friend who was a scientist for the pharmaceutical company, which was sort of an in for my father. And he worked there for a number of years. Uh-huh. And in time, we actually moved out to Long Island. And what had started as a very small house, he put a couple of additions on and became a little larger.
Uh-huh. So how old were you when you moved, roughly?
Well, I went to kindergarten out there.
Oh.
So
so this was within a year or so?
It must have been very quickly,
I see. So then is that where you grew up then?
That's where I grew up until I was 12 or 11. And then we had to move back to the city, although we kept that house.
Uh-huh. I see.
But I had another trip to Germany in between.
Oh, when was that?
And in 1939, this grandmother from Celle came to visit, and my mother thought it would be a very good chance for me to brush up on my German, which I had pretty much forgotten. Mm-hmm. And so I went back with her in June, I think it was June, might have been May, of 1939.
Wow.
And in retrospect, this has totally puzzled me because they were very political and discussed politics and all the time, read the New York Times all the time. And that I would be sent there so short before the actual onset of war. Right? Although I recall that the war was an extreme surprise to all of us when it happened.
Oh.
It was, I had been sent to a German school there, which was very, very hard for me. And, but I knew we were all surprised.
Hmm. But the buildup had been happening. I mean,
Not really. Not in Celle, it didn't happen. Uh-huh. Maybe it happened in Berlin, but my point of view was from Celle, and so far as I knew, none of my classmates knew it. I was sent on a day to go buy some sugar or something, some errand for my grandmother, and they told me I couldn't buy it without ration cards, and I didn't know what that was. Came home. Things were rationed overnight.
Wow.
And the war was a big surprise.
Hmm. So you went without your brother?
Without my brother. This time I went alone. Uh-huh. And I had to get back from Germany alone. Hmm. And
how long did you stay?
Well, from September on, I think it was a matter of trying to get back.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't make it until 1940.
Oh, but you were trying to.
Or the people behind me. I was only 9 then, so I personally wasn't trying it a whole lot.
Right.
But I tried to get back, and I know they were trying it. My grandmother mentioned it once in a while. And but by the time I actually made it, I had to go through the Brenner Pass and then go to Genoa.
By yourself.
Which I had to do by myself and then wait in Italy until a ship came by to pick me up. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So I had a fairly adventuresome time there.
Would you must have seen some effects of the beginning of the war, did you?
Well, yes, we had, the moment the war started, we had we were told that we had to have a bomb shelter in the basement of the house. We were told what you had to have in the bomb shelter. Everyone had to fit their windows with black curtains. If you rode a bike, you had to fasten your light with a very tiny opening so that you wouldn't cast lights around. We were told what to put into the bomb shelters, how much water to have, and so on. And we actually had an air raid. So the British came over, and my grandmother refused to go into the basement. And I said she had to. She was pretty autocratic, but I pulled her. And finally she said, okay, I'll go. Mm. But that was only one occasion.
Yeah. So were you afraid? How did you feel when you were leaving? Was it adventure, or was it fright, or was it a combination of feeling, or how?
Well, it was mostly the problem of simply not knowing. People don't fill you in and give you a whole litany of what may or may not happen, or mm-hmm. what you can or should not do. You're sort of put on the train and said, get out in Genoa. Mm. Somehow my adults were not very forthcoming. Mm. So
they couldn't go with you. They were forbidden to go.
Well, no, my one grandmother tried to come with me, but she was taken off the train at the Brenner Pass. And so I went on alone. And I think I was one of those unimaginative kids. I didn't have a great deal of worries, didn't suddenly come in on me, although I certainly was worried. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I wasn't panic-stricken.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything about that trip that you remember?
Oh, yes. You remember many things about that trip. You know, the German soldiers coming and taking my grandmother off. I certainly remember that. And them streaming through the train and searching everything. I had two Groschen. They took those away from me.
German coins.
Oh.
20 cents, 2 pieces, 10 cents.
So I had literally no money. There was no money. But I was used to that. My parents never gave me much money, so we always traveled on dimes and nickels. Uh-huh. And
were there other children traveling?
No. Mm-hmm. I was the only child that I could see. Mm-hmm. And I did notice when we got to Genoa, I could by that time read. Mm-hmm. And I did get off, but I was certainly concerned about what would happen then. Mm-hmm. But I was met by the Red Cross in time, and I was taken to a hotel, and I was told to wait there.
And then what?
Which I did. And I was very lonely because everyone spoke Italian, and I didn't know any Italian. Tried to find some people who perhaps knew English. And I did finally find a book in German, and I was very glad to be able to have something to read because I had nothing to do. And I tried to get to the harbor to see if I could find any news about the arrival of an American boat. But the moment you set foot outside the hotel, there would be all this noise and racket. And I ran back into the hotel. And somebody said to me, it's only because you're blonde Italians do that. Don't worry about it.
Oh.
So I did managed to make my way to the harbor. I still don't know how I did it, but it was in March of that time, and I remember people walking in sweaters and shirts. It was really very pleasant in Genoa in March.
So how long were you at the port then, in Genoa?
Well, I was there for at least 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And the people at the harbor, the stevedores, were very nice to me, and they spoke very slow Italian, thinking I might know what they were talking about. But it wasn't much help. Mm-hmm. But they were nice. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it would have been much better for me if I had been told that there was somebody watching over me, that I was not going to be perhaps forever in Genoa.
Yeah, right.
And that someone would come for me and see to it.
But no. But did that ever happen? Did someone come?
Oh, yes, somebody did come. Uh-huh. But then I thought, why? I didn't have to worry all this time.
Right. So who came for you?
Red Cross.
Oh, uh-huh.
Person from the Red Cross came.
And how? What happened? I mean, what did they do for you?
They said, well, your boat, which was the boat, the President Polk. And that was a part freighter and part passenger, the President lines. And they said it was going to come and I would go on a boat.
So
I was happy to hear that.
And did a Red Cross person then go on that boat with you?
Escorted me on the boat, but then they left me.
But then
there.
They left you on the boat.
Right. So we had a long crossing, the boat was crammed with people. And we stopped in Marseille. And as I told Margaret, I just saw this film, Bon Voyage. Did you see that?
I didn't, no.
It's a good movie. And they want to go to Marseille to see if they can meet a boat. And holding people off the boat. They couldn't take any more on. And the people in the movie decided to go to Nice instead of Marseille, and I thought at the time that was a good plan. Our boat was filled up.
So did you feel that you were getting away from a dangerous situation? I mean, did you have that sense when you were 9?
Well, we had that one, we had the one air raid. And, of course, I saw the soldiers at the Brenner Pass and them inspecting our train, right? But Italy was perfectly calm and pleasant. It was sunny and warm and had no feeling of imminent danger there. Mm-hmm. Although I had heard about one of the President lines being bombed. And but people were not filling me up with a lot of dangerous thought, you know. And of course, I couldn't read Italian. So people hoped. I think they were hoping it would not be a long engagement.
Yeah.
Right.
So then, what happened when you reached New York again?
New York. People were there snapping pictures of me.
Family?
Daily News.
Oh, the Daily News.
That's right, and so on. And my parents were there, and they brought my little sister, whom I was really yearning to see, the same one whom you met. And we went back home.
So I guess you felt relieved again to be back with your family, with your parents?
I was relieved, yes. And then I was also relieved when I got back to school that I hadn't missed a beat, because when I was in Germany, that was a hard school. They were very much ahead of us, very much. Everything was in much greater depth. The gym was gymnastics. we ran around in circles, you know. I was the star of the softball team because I could hit. But that was the only real game we played. Math was way ahead. Sewing was way ahead. Music, way ahead.
So you didn't go to Germany just to study German. You went to school using German.
I went
as
to
a
school
language.
As a, and which wasn't easy for me,
yeah,
because
I
had been just speaking
English.
English.
Right.
But by the time I was there for 6 months, I thought I'd forgotten English.
Oh. Hmm.
Because I did nothing but read and write German.
Right. Well,
it's amazing how fast children adapt.
They're amazing. Okay, so when you got back here, now it was already 1941, right?
40.
1940.
1940 I came back.
Okay, 1940.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in 1940 that your uncle was interned here at Ellis Island. So when did you...
I don't think he was here that early. He was not here that early.
He was if you read the interview,
okay.
You get a good timeline. He was apprehended in 1941 for sure.
Okay.
Now, they used to have a program which was called Town Meeting of the Air, which you could listen to on the radio. And my parents, being very political, would listen to this. It happened, I believe, every week. And then we heard that he was going to speak on it, too. So I recall listening to some extent, but I didn't really understand what he was talking about. And he came frequently to visit. He would bring other friends. He also had a house in Brightwaters.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a very constant visitor. Weekends.
Did you have did you know, like, why he got arrested?
No. In fact, I asked my mother about it. And she told me, people did not give me full answers, right, that there wasn't a real reason for it. And he had taken the line of the United States not coming into the war. That had been his point of view. He did not feel that the United States should join. But he was not alone in this. It was, you know, I did not know this at the time, but I know that Roosevelt had to work pretty hard on swinging the intentions of the people to his position, which was to help England. But he had to work at it.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1940, my uncle was not alone. I asked him once why he took that position, and he said even at that time it was far easier to get speaking engagements being on that position than on the other. But I didn't really know a great deal about his politics, and I did not know why he was picked up, which was pretty close to the, I think was in the state of Washington. I think he had crossed the country to leave.
So did he travel around giving speeches? Is that
Well, he did quite a bit of that. And now he in general traveled around quite a bit, and he had what we call an interesting life, even as a kid.
What was so interesting?
Well, for one thing, as I told my cousin here, he would come and visit us, the convertible Lincoln Zephyr. I mean, I thought this was the most beautiful car in the world. And we were driven around with our hair flying in the wind and had a great time. We knew he went on trips such as safaris. He was always just coming back from Europe or just going. And And when my parents went to large parties, they were usually his parties. Mm-hmm. And as I said, we listened to him on the radio. If he brought, he had his wife would come over. She was a beautiful woman. If she wasn't there, there would be some other beautiful woman. My mother seemed more down to earth to me. I wouldn't put her in that category. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Of being a beautiful woman, right? But he had the glamour life.
Uh-huh.
And as I've told Margaret, I would get interesting presents from him. Once a year I got a very nice typewriter, which I loved and proceeded to type right away. And it was better than my father's typewriter.
Mm.
Another year he gave me a monkey for a present. I like that, too.
A live one?
Yes. I rode him around in my baby carriage, which I hadn't ever used for a doll, but it stunned the neighbors when they'd look in and see there was a real live monkey there.
Uh-huh.
But my mother got tired of this companion in the house and told my uncle he had to come and pick it up. So he was always interesting.
Yeah. Did he ever, like, convey anything about his philosophy, his values, his attitudes, per se, or maybe indirectly?
Not really. But he had a sense of fun, and if any good pictures were taken of my brother and me, they were taken by him. He always had a beautiful camera. And he was just always interesting. And he was also one of these people who talked to children very well. He could talk to anybody.
He himself did not have children?
Well, he did later.
Oh. Uh-huh.
But he didn't at that time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had them quite a bit later. Right. When was Hendrik born?
52.
Yeah, which is about when I started having children.
So what was, I know we have it on the other tape, but what was his birth date?
Well, that was in on Christmas Eve in 1899.
Uh-huh.
And
so he had children in his 50s. He was in his 50s when he had.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. And as I said, we knew he was political. My parents had a lot of political discussions. And
do you remember anything about their political views?
I just knew I hope one day to grow up and be able to understand what they were talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It was always hard to fathom. And my father used to try and lead us into many political discussions, which we did have ourselves later. He was a big believer in dinner conversation, and I remember heatedly discussing problems with Egypt. And we would always become very heated in these discussions, and I really had no firm opinion on Egypt at all, but once you start talking about it and are egged on by my father, mm-hmm. you became heated.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. he still has some of those characteristics, old as he is now.
Mm. Well.
So, and in fact, my brother still complains about him.
Would he remember much about your Uncle Fried and his politics?
He might, but I don't put any value in it.
You mean
I think my father has has glossed over his history quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a large family reunion a few years ago, and my father decided to relate what happened to him in his life. And once he got to me, when I got in on the picture, it was impossible for me to sit still to hear this because I knew a lot of this didn't happen. And then it got live to when my sister was involved. Now I could see her practically trembling. And because he has a very narrow vision of what happened. Mm-hmm. I do know that they were very good friends for quite a long time. And I have many pictures of the two of them together. They once decided that they would wow a beach, and both of them had bought bathing suits that only went to the waist.
Oh.
And they were both bounced out of the beach. Couldn't do that in those days.
Well, is there anything else? Well, why don't we talk about your visiting him here?
Yes, because once the war became imminent here and the rationing was of gasoline was a problem, we moved from Bright Waters, and my parents bought a house in Queens.
Ah, because you couldn't really buy gas in order to get back and forth, is that why?
Gasoline was pretty firmly rationed. And so we moved to Queens. And I knew also that my uncle's problems had increased because he was now sent to prison. And I knew my mother was working very hard to try and get him out of prison. Now, recently, when I have moved now from my house, where I used to live near Boston, I now live on the Cape, my mother had put several boxes of correspondence and things in under my eaves. I had a big house. I never looked to see what was in these things until I moved a few years, right? And so now I have these letters, and I have some of the letters which she wrote to the judges trying to get him released. And I didn't realize the extent of...
That she had gone to help him out.
Right. I knew to some extent, of course, but we were in school all day and so on, and didn't know that she had written really some very good letters, very persuasive letters to these judges.
Can you say anything just briefly about what the content, what her persuasions were, what the content of the letters were?
Actually, I should be able to do that because I read a couple of these. Of course, her position is that he was not an enemy agent. It's true that he took that position that America should not go into the war at the time. But when you get right down to it, what do people really know about their siblings? You do not necessarily know everything about them at all, right? And perhaps she didn't know, but this was certainly her position, that he was not a dangerous alien at all. And in that he was in solitary confinement was an extraordinary sorrow to her. And seemed really overextending enormously. And he was there for quite a while, so far as I can recall.
And that was prior to his Ellis Island?
Yes. Yes, and he was in Lorton, L-O-R-T-O-N. You probably know Lorton.
So when you visited him, did you visit him there? Were you able to?
No,
you weren't
no.
able to.
No. I think she went down once, but I never did. It wasn't until he went to Ellis Island that we visited, and my brother and I visited regularly.
Well, now, it must have been something of a reprieve for him to be here as compared with solitary confinement
in a prison. I'm sure it was heaven compared to solitary confinement. Mm-hmm. And certainly when we came to visit, soon we also knew the guards, said hello to them when we came in, because we came so often. And I could tell that there was a very friendly exchange of, not large conversations, but you could tell that the atmosphere was not one of...
A punitive.
Right. Mm-hmm. That it was really quite a friendly exchange that they used to have. They seemed to know everybody by name, and it seemed to be sort of an happy aura, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm. And what do you remember about your uncle during those visits?
Well, one of the things that I remember is that he seemed to know everything. And as I told Margaret, I had just entered a class of trigonometry, but he certainly knew all about that right away. And I don't know if my parents would have known the difference between cosines and tangents and cosecants and so on, but he did. Hmm. And that we enjoyed going here and enjoyed talking to him for the hour or two that we were here.
Hmm. And so how long was he in the other in the prison? Do you know?
Actually, I could look that up, because in one of the letters my mother mentions it, and I think it's for months.
Hmm. Did you notice, did you see him like before he was in the prison and then here after
oh,
the
yes.
prison? Did you notice
no.
changes in him?
No.
Or?
No. He was as friendly, and he didn't act as though he had been through an enormous trial or seemed moody. Nothing. He was his old self, and as I said, we enjoyed visiting him.
Now, did he feel he was unjustly held here?
If he did, he'd never told me that. And of course, I saw him much more intimately when he was actually let out in 1946, and he came to live with my aunt and me. So, as Heidi told you in her conversation, she, we tried to finish our year of high school that spring, and I stayed 2-3 months with my aunt, and he came during part of that time.
Now, was your aunt your mother's sister?
Right.
His sister.
Mm-hmm. So his uh-huh. sister, too. Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in time, it didn't take very long for her to become irked with him because he smoked and so on. But,
and it was a one-room apartment.
With a one-room apartment. And I did notice that the women who lived in the house, when they came to visit, all of a sudden looked a whole lot nicer than they ever had before, because we had a few parties, and everyone liked to come and talk to him. Mm. And he had other friends who came from other places. So.
Mm-hmm. So, is there anything else you can think of about his positions or the reasons that he might have been targeted?
As I said, he certainly gave political speeches.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the one thing that I knew.
Mm-hmm.
I know that he was always up on the war and what was happening, what mm-hmm. ship had just gone someplace. I know I remember him telling us about the new ship called the Bismarck, which had gone off, and I, in one direction, showed it to me on a map where it had gone. and then where British boat came and so on. He had a way of making things very interesting. Mm-hmm. Right? But if he did anything beyond making these political speeches, which he only did before America went into the war, he certainly didn't do it after that. Mm. Now, he did tell me, we did ask him what he did to entertain himself here while he was at Ellis Island. And they had started sort of intramural school here. And there were quite a few educated Germans who gave lessons in various different things, in language and history and so on. And so did my uncle.
He gave lessons here?
He was a lecturer here in this little impromptu school mm-hmm. that they set up for the mm-hmm. members to go to and spend the time. And he did once send me an outline of one of the classes that he gave here in history mm-hmm. for his students.
Wow.
So that was interesting to us.
That was like world history? Do you remember?
Well, world history and perhaps what of the future history of the world would be.
Evolution.
Well, evolution, that takes thousands and thousands of years. But he had hoped for another League of Nations type thing, which of course did happen with the UN. But I think he had predicted a little better and stronger UN, mm-hmm. which we may still get to at some point.
Let's see, I just had a question and lost it. Did he say anything else about life here? Anything else about his, either the other people? I mean, were you aware of the Japanese and the Italians?
No. Uh-huh. No.
So you only saw him and other German...
Yes.
Internees.
Right. I would have noticed if there were Japanese. I might not have noticed Italians unless I heard them speaking that mm-hmm. language I didn't know.
No, right.
But he never spoke of Italians, and I kind of have the feeling they were segregated here. Uh-huh. I don't think they necessarily mixed them at all. Uh-huh. Do you know if that's true?
I don't know that, actually. I don't know if they were separated.
Yeah.
That's a good question, actually.
I think they were. Mm-hmm. I only saw people who seemed German to me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And
did he ever mention Hitler or his feeling about him or anything like that in your...
No, he didn't mention Hitler. When I was in Germany, there was... Hitler drove into Celle.
Oh.
When I was there.
Wow.
Yeah. And we lived on a road called the Hannoversche Heerstrasse.
Which comes from Hanover, so he could have entered by that.
Which is what he did. And he went right by. That's right. And
do you remember people's reactions? And
oh, well, people were certainly very eager to see him. Actually, I thought I would go see him too, because everyone was so keen on it. But I can't say that I remembered seeing him. Mm-hmm. But I do know that he came by. And but in general, Celle is a beautiful town, which is very peaceful. It's a small city. And you could walk anywhere. It was beautifully tended with flowers and lovely trees, and everything seemed to be very well run. As I said, the school was excellent, and so that there was one benefit that my grandmother had that I was there and after the war started, and that was that she could get a liter of whole milk. Everybody else had to get skim milk. But that was about the extent of the war that I saw. General enthusiasm when Hitler was going to come through, but I don't think I stuck the watch out. I knew of him, and I knew people were going to see him, but I don't think I stayed around for the event.
Were you aware of any pro-Hitler attitudes of people here who were interned as enemy aliens?
No. I don't think that would have been smart to get into any discussions about this kind of thing.
Here?
Right? Yeah.
Now, apparently it happened. But
it did?
Yeah. I mean, that's what's commonly believed, yeah.
Yeah. If there was, I'm not aware of it. What was in that outline for my uncle was certainly not in that. And as I said, I do think that Hitler did a lot for Germany. It was, after all, taken from being in terrible shape to what I, as a 9-year-old, considered excellent shape when I was there. And certainly, as I said, the school was excellent. And it is true that kids were members of the Hitler Jugend. And I, as a Girl Scout, was invited to come to a meeting.
BDM, then, for girls.
Whatever it was. I was not particularly thrilled with the meeting and didn't go again. It didn't seem to be particularly interesting. But certainly trains ran on time. Everyone could get anything they wanted. And it seemed to be a pleasant way to live when I was there. Brightwaters is a very small town. It was a very small town, very rural. And as I said, the school was nowhere near as good.
Let me pause. Okay, this is the end of tape one, and we're going to conclude with another tape. Here with tape two. Why don't you say what it was, first of all, how long and how frequent your visits were to Ellis Island to see your uncle, and then how you got here and all the particular details of that.
Well, my brother and I were devoted subway riders, and we especially liked the elevated subway. So to go on the elevated train here, it's just a very pleasant Saturday excursion. And then a boat ride at the same time. And then chatting with my uncle for an hour or two. Can't remember how long it was. And then we would have this lovely ride home. And we did this many a weekend. Now, we were also members of the Museum of Natural History, so we couldn't have done it every weekend. But if you were to ask me now, I would say we did it every weekend for quite a while.
Yeah. For like more than a year?
Well, it seems to me, right? I don't recall actually going in the thick of winter, because most of the time we just stood outdoors and watched the Ellis Island approach and enjoyed the wind.
And say something about the boat that took you here.
Well, it looked very similar to the one we came on. It had the same benches along
the circle line that you came on?
Well, it had the same rather uncomfortable benches on the inside.
Oh, And did you say it cost a nickel?
It cost a nickel, yeah. And the subway cost a nickel, too. And you could spin the subway out to an hour and a half riding if you were good at it.
Did it cost you a nickel to go back, or the same nickel brought you back?
No, I don't remember if that was a two-way trip, but it was a nickel. It was very reasonable to get around town.
And then where would you meet with your uncle once you got to Ellis Island? Do you know?
Like, in the hallway.
In the great hall? Had,
I don't know if it was that great hall that we came in. Mm-hmm. But it was certainly a large hall with big tables, and we sat opposite each other. Mm-hmm. And there were other people, too, who came doing the same thing.
Do you remember, did your uncle ever talk about what was possible? In other words, did they have an active library here? Did he ever talk about how he spent his days?
Well, I told you we did talk with him about his time here to some extent, and he told us of the school they had started and some of the classes that were being taught, and then he took enough trouble to make copies and send me a copy of one of the classes he was teaching.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he made he had friends here? I mean, did you
have
any?
I'm sure he did. I'm sure he did. And the general aura was convivial, in my view. Mm-hmm. And as I said, the guards were all nice to us. We soon knew them by name too. We'd always say hello to them. They'd say, "Oh, he's waiting for you." So it was a friendly atmosphere. Uh-huh. If you had to be detained, it was a friendly atmosphere.
Yeah. Were you aware of people leaving?
No.
Being repatriated or being set free here?
No. He never talked about missing somebody or that a good friend went off. He never spoke of that. Mm-hmm. And even when he came out, he did not complain of his time. He was not a complainer. Mm-hmm. I would have never known he was in solitary confinement, certainly. Mm-hmm. And the only thing he did mention was at his trial, he said that there were quite a few people who lied at the trial regarding him. Mm. And he, of course, felt that was very unjust. And that is about the one thing that he talked to me about that he felt was very unfair.
Did he say what they lied about or anything?
No,
like that?
No, not specifically. He didn't tell me, but he did tell me that witnesses lied and got him into trouble. Yeah.
Did he ever give you any indications, like, why he thought the United States shouldn't get into the war?
No. Mm-mm. No. And, of course, I have since read a great deal about it. Certainly, the First World War, there are many, many people who feel we shouldn't have gotten into that war. Many people who feel we shouldn't have gotten into the Spanish-American War. Mm. Never mind our most recent war. Many contrary opinions. Mm-hmm. And in fact, you seem to be much more able to have contrary opinions now than you did at that time.
That's true.
At that time, for World War II, it was a gung-ho effort and there were no contrary opinions.
Right.
Once it had all started.
Good point, yeah.
Right. So times have changed so far as war is concerned.
Yeah. Now, I've interviewed some people who were interned here, some German people, and they said the worst thing was that they didn't know what was going to happen to them. Did your uncle ever talk that way, that, you know, here he is, his life is interrupted, he's detained someplace, and didn't know what would happen?
I'm sure it was a worry for him. I'm certain it was a worry for him. And let's say even soldiers weren't told where they were going to go and where they were going to be sent. And just one day, you get orders. And, of course, the same thing would be happening to detainees. And I'm sure it was a worry for him.
Mm-hmm. But he probably didn't talk about it because he didn't do that?
Well, we were kids.
We were
young kids. And
do you remember the Christmas party? What do you remember about the Christmas party?
Well, we do remember that it was festive and that it was a very nice dinner and that people seemed to be in very good moods. So, and for a change, my little sister came too, plus my parents. Normally, we seem to go alone all the time to visit our uncle. Right?
Uh-huh.
And we got dressed up. Yes, we got dressed up. And it was, and I had the feeling at the time that the guards who were here and so on were trying to be nice to everybody. There was a convivial feeling. So, as I said, if you had to be detained, it was a good place to be detained. They played ping pong a lot. We knew that.
Were you aware when he was released? Can you say anything about that? I mean, it was what, 1946?
1946, when he suddenly was released, and he came and stayed with my aunt. And I was there. We were already tight, just my aunt and me, in a one-room apartment. Now adding him to it made it even tighter. But I was going to school. I was busy all day long. And, of course, she was going to work all day. So that we spent evenings together. We had parties. I know he gave some talks of his travels. He had slides and would give talks and so on. And friends of my aunt would come. And then he had people visiting. We immediately had visitors from Buffalo and from various different places who came to see him. And he still didn't quite know what would happen to him. And I think since his divorce had been final, I think some of these visitors were sort of thinking of marriage.
Oh.
But
so
it
was
never
he
happened.
Married when he was here?
No.
No.
I don't think so. I think
in the 40s,
think the divorce was final. What was the date of the divorce?
Yeah, it's
1941, is it?
Yeah, I think it's 1941.
I think his divorce was final at that time.
Just about when he came here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I think some of the visitors were thinking of that.
Uh-huh. So do you have a sense of whether, having been here for a number of years, was he able to pick up his life in other ways? I mean, in other words, his working life, did he work anymore? Or
he did not work when he was there with us for that two-month time period. And
what did he do for work? Did he taught?
Well, he had been teaching, yes, and he did do quite a bit of writing.
Writing.
Mm-hmm. And I still have some of the articles that he wrote. And in fact, as I was telling Margaret, I took one of them to my father, and I asked him if he would like to hear an article about.
What were they written about?
Well, this was an article about the future unification of Europe. Happened to be the one that I took. That was in American Mercury, And I was reading it to my father, but I didn't tell him who wrote it.
Ah.
And I didn't tell him when it was written. So I'm just reading to him and editing out references of Churchill making a speech or something which would give
would
it away.
Date it. Mm-hmm.
Then my father said, he said, you know, I don't know whom you're reading, but he's truly out of date. So
well,
I was reading this in 2000, I think I was reading it, and the article had been written in 1937, right?
Your father's sharp.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh. He said he is truly out of date, this person. He said, where did you find him? But it was just fun to read it to him.
So can you say anything else about, or anything about the rest of his life? In other words, he got out of here and he came to stay with you. And then what happened after that?
Then we went, my brother and I, we had to meet up. Heidi said my brother stayed with us too, but he did not. He stayed with a friend of his who was living in Queens at the time. We were both going to Jamaica High School. And my brother and I went to New Hampshire, which is where my parents had moved to. And then my mother told us that Uncle Freed was going to be deported. And he did not want to go back. He had made a life here, and he had certainly had, much of his life had been very pleasant here. And I think he wanted to stay.
And what year was this, roughly?
Well, I expect it was in 1946. It seemed to me not too long after I left that he had to be deported, but I could be wrong in that. But not too long afterwards.
And so was he picked up again then to be deported?
No, I think he was simply told that he had to return, and he did.
And he did?
And he did, sure. You didn't argue that.
Mm-hmm.
And
I wonder if he was deported out of Ellis Island, actually, like, because that was a deportation place.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's possible that he might have come back for a short time here mm-hmm. in order mm-hmm. to do that. But how it went and which boat he took, or, I don't know.
Well, then, Margaret, did you see him then when he went back to Germany?
When he arrived in Celle. Yeah.
In 1946 or so?
I would assume it was more 47. I was 11 or 12 when I saw him, and I was born in 36. So that has been 47, 48 when I saw him for the first time. And we were also anticipating that he was coming. I remember that he was going to be coming.
What was the family, did the family have like an expectation of him?
Oh, as a child, certainly I had expectation of an uncle coming to Germany, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and can you remember your first impressions?
My first impression? I don't know if I really make this up now, that he was very tall, which he actually was. And for me as a child, maybe it was important that he was even taller than my father. But my father wasn't there, so no. I don't know too much, no. When is our grandmother's birthday? Do you remember? Was that at Christmas time?
I don't remember her birthday.
Hmm. Because I remember the big thing was that he was there for her birthday for the first time. And he chose not to stay with all the ladies. He just came for a short while.
Uh-huh.
But as I said on the other tape, he talked to me more personally. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I thought it was interesting that you had this book without covers.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about
that. We had a fair number of books without covers, because they were always removed when they were given to my uncle, and he was an solitary confinement. So evidently my sister had Anna Karenina, well, I had War and Peace.
You mean they were removed so we wouldn't hurt them, do anything with the covers? Is that?
Well, I think perhaps you can hide a knife in a cover or something like that. I'm presuming that's why it was taken off. But they also had comments of his along the edges, and that was sort of interesting for me to see. So I read his copy of Anna, not Anna Karenina, but War and Peace. I still have it.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Maybe Margaret, or actually from different perspectives, can you say anything about his mother and in relation to him?
Sort of. She was very, very happy that he came initially. And so I was always under the impression that this was a wonderful homecoming. That was my thinking. But I can see now why he really didn't want to come home, because he had been away for too long from Germany, right? Since 1923. So most of his adult life, professionally wise, had been in this country. And that's when you make your important friends. I know this from my first husband. So, but I now know through his son, who has the letters, that he wanted to come back and try to come back in the 50s to this country.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Did he ever come back?
No.
He never visited?
One thing I can remember I was thinking of when Ruth was talking about him talking to him talking easily to children, or when she talked about him having two sons in this second marriage to our Aunt Johanna. And the first son is called Hendrik, and the second son is called Peter. The great surprise was that when the first son learned how to speak, which I assume was when he was two or two and a half, that Uncle Fried taught him all the capitals of the world. So this little boy, you know, by that time, I guess I was, how old was I? 52. Well, 16. That he was asked what was the capital of Iceland, and I didn't know it. But he knew it, this 2.5-year-old boy. He knew it was Reykjavik. And then, naturally, I never forgot what was the capital of Iceland.
Yeah, but this was a whole characteristic of that family. Now, my mother had to learn the three highest mountains in Mexico.
Oh. Her father made her learn that?
So they are Tlalpetl, Popocatépetl, and Henry. And we all did that. I forced my children to learn the difference between isosceles triangles and equilateral triangles and so on when they were 2 and 3. Right. They always had their bread cut according to the triangle of their choice. And
so this is a family.
It's a family characteristic, trait. Right. Uh-huh. It's a family trait.
Well,
Margaret didn't seem to join it in forcing her daughter to learn inconvenient things.
And I think when I talk to he lives in Germany, he's far away. We are in contact, but not regular contact. When I talked to Henrik, he didn't know that he knew these capitals of the world. So, at the age of 3 or even younger. So,
So what about your Uncle Fried's life after he returned to Germany? What can you sort of put it in
perspective? Well, he had lots of books in his room, but I may have mentioned that before, books and magazines. And he was not complaining. I didn't know that he was trying to come back to this country. I did not. I had no notion that he was unhappy. He did not appear unhappy to me. But I can see why, on the long run, to live with my grandmother was a little difficult for him. I mean, she was into gardening and into church, and none of these things were his interest. So, but I also didn't notice that they did not get along. It did not come across to me.
Mm-hmm. Did he
also,
have?
I wasn't there that much. I was not in the same house. I lived in a small town, and now and then visited my grandmother.
I see. Do you know if your uncle had a social group, a social network of people that he...
He certainly tried, I think, because he made also there in, as I said before, he gave these speeches in different towns about his life.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was a one way of... have an interesting life, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that he was thinking and reading and writing, I assume. And then he married. But, you know, where was his study? Where could his family live? It was all a problem because of the small rooms and few rooms where one could meet each other.
Mm-hmm.
But he had his own room. But I don't know where Tante Johanna's room was. I mean, anyhow.
Hmm. Did he get a job teaching or doing anything?
No, as far as I remember, he got a job with his brother, and they worked for...
With his brother? With
Uncle
Hubert?
Hubert.
Doing what?
Uncle Hubert, Karl Hans, the cousin, and I think also Uncle Fried. Got a job in the laundry for the British occupation forces.
In the laundry?
Yeah, I think they worked in the laundry. One thing they had soap. And something to eat. But you could use it, I guess, to get something to eat with soap. You could go to the black market. Mm. But everybody had to exist until the money exchange was better. Couldn't buy anything for money, really.
So do you have a sense of how long he persisted in trying to get back to the United States? I mean, did he stop trying at some point that you know of, or?
I cannot tell you that. I just found out recently when we came for the first interview with Heidi that I did call up Henrik in Germany, and we were talking not about the same subjects. I was interested in letters that refer to Ellis Island, and he was talking about letters that he wrote in 1950, 51, 52, or even later, that he wanted to come back to this country. That is, so I mm-hmm. only found out about mm-hmm. that. He wanted to come back 2 months ago. And then I read this paper there, and there it is mentioned also.
Yeah.
So Henrik has the letters that he trying seemingly to have him, I mean, that to establish that there was nothing wrong with him of having lived in this country. I mean, he wanted to be whitewashed. Things to be put right. Whitewash may be a wrong expression.
Yes, yeah, it is.
Uh-huh.
But I had the feeling, too, he wanted to come back, and I was writing him mm-hmm. at the time.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So I knew he wanted to
but
come back.
But he did, in the end, get a teaching job in secretarial school, not at a university level.
Oh, uh-huh.
Teaching English, this is an assumption now.
Uh-huh. So I
Hannover. That's why I had to travel every day from Celle to Hannover, and he was either on a motorcycle or on a Motorola, which is an even more flexible, insecure vehicle. And there was some street repair done, or new building of a street between Celle and Hannover, and that is where the accident occurred, that he died immediately. You know, when the street becomes more slippery and you're not aware of it, or sand was on the street, I don't know why I think of that, but there was repair work being done on the road that he took every day. And that is where this the Calamus accident took place. There he died.
And how old was he at the time?
Well, it was about in 1953. So he must have been about 54.
And having these two young children.
Because I was at Harvard. I know when I was at Harvard, and that's when I heard that he was...
Peter was half a year old, I think.
Well,
and Hendrik,
you know that better.
Do you remember, did you go to his funeral?
Yes, I did go to his funeral.
Is there
a very, very sad funeral in comparison to the funeral of my grandmother, which was not very much later. And I, coming home thinking, oh, we were happy at the second funeral. I mean, I don't know why that was so, but it was just so tragic. Nobody thought that this would happen.
Yeah. Was there any particular eulogy or anything at the funeral that kind of spoke of the unusual and many faceted life that he had?
No.
Yeah.
There was. I have the feeling, but I really don't remember, that my father did do the service. But as a brother, I assume that he did the service in cellar for him. And you asked me where his grave was, right? We have to call up where it is. Because my assumption was that he was put next to his mother and in this town of Westerzelle, which is right, goes into Zelle.
And his mother died after he did.
Yeah. And this was what my observation, that I saw the same people practically a few months later. I think it was half a year apart.
But she had been very ill, and in
yeah,
one way it was a blessing.
She had been inside the hospital, right. Out the hospital.
Right. And it was a blessing that she had died.
She was in a wheelchair. Yeah. She could occasionally, she was in a wheelchair. Most of the time she was in the bed. She stayed with us for the past 2 years of her life.
I see. And his storm. Father, was his father also buried there?
Yes, he was. I remember the, and you remember.
I remember the
father,
cross.
Our grandfather's grave better than I do.
Because yes, because we went every couple of weeks to take care of it.
Water it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then did his wife and children stay in Germany?
They did stay in Celle. Oh, yes. Yes, definitely. And then the house was sold, so she had to move out. And actually, for the first time, I think she had her own private life with her two boys in a newly built small house. Small house, but it was her house. Because living with my grandmother in her grandmother in that house upstairs was not that pleasant for her. I don't think so. And then my father was didn't take care of the family, but whenever he was in Celle, he would go and visit his wife and the two children. And whenever he could incorporate, he made trips for the parish. Once a year, he had a busload of people and brought them to an interesting place in the area, and he incorporated the two sons of Uncle Fried. They accompanied him on these parish trips.
Now, your father was a minister?
Right. Yes.
And was your Uncle Fried religious in any way?
I don't think so. Not that much, no. No, he wasn't. One thing I want to say about his son, his younger son who visited me a year ago, one of his first statements was, did you know that your father was my most preferred uncle? So, you know, I mean, they tried to invite them as much as they could, especially when they again lived close to Zelle. My father had another parish in the meantime, but we were all grown up, and then my parents invited my cousins, so they could pick cherries in the garden, things like that.
Well,
but it's not, I don't know if we have to talk to the sons with K came across through their mother. There was a diary, and there are letters, but we don't know how many are left.
And do they live in Germany now?
One of them lives in Berlin, yes, and the other one lives in Konstanz, which is in the south of Germany. Bodensee is in the German name also of the same lake. Uh-huh. And on this lake is the city of Konstanz.
Well, just a question to each of you. How do you think your thinking about your uncle has changed over the years? I mean, from the time that you knew him and then he died and now years and years later. Do you think your thinking has changed about him, or your memories, or your attitudes, or anything?
I think my impression of him has been pretty constant. The same thing. My father now keeps trying to change my opinion on this. And I told him he's barking up the wrong tree.
He wants to change your opinion of your uncle?
Yes. Well, he has notions all the time.
Well, we are women, and that's, I guess, has something to do with it.
They were good friends at the time, and he never said anything much about my uncle until many years after he died. And my mother had died, too. So there's no one to contradict him anymore.
But he seems to have put a lesser light on your uncle over the
well,
time?
Well, he would say that, he didn't really like to work. He really liked to have a good time. Statements like this. Mm-hmm. And but it's not true. He was frequently busy.
Uh-huh.
Right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure.
Yeah. Well, he has things to prove it, right?
That's right. He does have things to prove it.
Yeah.
And in point of fact, when you talk about my father about what he did the first few years he was in this country, he enjoyed my uncle's company a great deal, and the two of them did many things and seemed to enjoy each other, and certainly my father enjoyed my uncle's sister. She's my mother. And as I said, he was a constant visitor, and I know that my father enjoyed it the whole time that he came.
So you pretty much feel, as far as you can see,
I haven't changed my opinion on him, and everything I've seen and things that I've read, and unfortunately, his handwriting isn't that easy for me to read. I have letters that he's written. I would like to read them, but they're quite a job. So I have to always say, well, if I have 4 or 5 hours, maybe, I'll do that. And it hasn't come up.
Heidi and I read 3 letters in 2 weeks, which we deciphered. And in one of them, it was not Uncle Fried's letters, but it was a letter of our grandmother. And it refers to the time that you want to go back to the United States in 1939, 1940. Tante Johanna went with you to Hamburg.
That's
in order
right.
to see that you could get the
passport.
The visa or the passport.
I had to get
and
a
she
passport.
Did not manage. Right. I don't know how it was managed in the end, but Tante Johanna could not manage it for you in Hamburg.
I know she couldn't.
Yeah, but this is sort of grandmother Auhagen talks about, our grandmother talks about Tante Johanna coming to visit to get you.
Right.
Yeah.
And I remember it clearly.
Yeah. And then she talks about you doing homework and how hard she tries that you spell correctly these German words. She's over anxious and she made you copy it again, you know, the work.
I remember that too.
That is in that letter.
And so you see my grandmother there. Here's this girl from this country who has to do a second language. And she makes her work and work and work that this 9-year-old or 10-year-old does her work neatly with good handwriting. So it's very fussy, you know, go through that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so if somebody like that has a son like Uncle Fried, it doesn't match, really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No, the point is, Margaret, I came over hardly knowing German. I knew a little baby German, which was a little embarrassing, but they had a son who was extremely bright, and they did not. I'm sure grandmother could tell him practically nothing, and that was what irked her.
Uh-huh.
While me, she could tell anything to.
Yeah. But the kind of relationship would be obvious that they weren't simpatico.
No, I don't think either one of them. It was very interesting to me when I would talk to my mother about her father, and she just loved her father, and he was the most wonderful person in the world. And I had asked my uncle about his father, the same one.
Father, right.
And it was a totally different person, totally different. His father was nothing but a thorn in the side to him. I couldn't believe that there could be such a different opinion about a father between a brother and a sister.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, is there anything else?
Anyway, it was great fun seeing you.
I
hope you
have
a lot of time to see all this over again.
I do. I'm going to put this, I'm going to make a copy, and this is the Friedrich Ernst O'Hagan collection that's at the Northwestern University Library. It tells what's in it. So we'll have a copy of that in our file. Mm-hmm. And I guess we've concluded. If there's anything else you wish to say. Okay, well, I thank you both. This is really quite an extraordinary, interesting...
Well, it's been nice for me. I'm glad you liked it, but it's been fun
very good for you,
here.
Too. Good, yes. Good. And maybe you'll look around and remember certain parts of the building.
Right.
Okay. This is Janet Levine for the National Park Service, and I've been speaking with Ruth Twombly and Marguerite Monod Kelly.
Well, you can also
close?
Say Mono Kelly.
Mono,
but it's all right.
Mono Kelly. Okay. And today is July 9th, the year 2004, and I'm signing off.